This is May 4th, 1980, Taos, New Mexico, and we're having a session with Bartholomew. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Good morning.
We were wondering if, as a sequel to last week's tape on the female principle, we could begin this session with some remarks on male energy or the male principle.
I feel that all ways of seeing these energy bands as in any way opposing, conflicting, is a part of the mass illusion. And what I will try to do is to present a statement that will give you the opportunity, the space within, if you wish to accommodate both views of yourself, both as male and as female. The current ideas, I think, on the total earth plane, and I cannot think at this moment of any exceptions to that, is that these are two forces somehow locked in mortal combat. And if somehow you are fortunate enough to be able to bring them together in a relationship, then you have achieved something great and amazing. This was not the will of the divine when both energies were dynamically poured onto the earth plane. I will state some things that you already know, but I feel that they must stand as the basis upon which I will build. Statement one. There is no one who has not incarnated as both male and female countless times. Statement two. There is no preference as to the hierarchy of consciousness in the male or the female. Statement three. The highest goal, if you wish to look at male and female energies in the earth plane, is to come to a conscious, I repeat, conscious awareness that both exist and allow yourself the freedom, I repeat, the freedom, to experiment and experience both in equal measure and not place yourself in an imbalanced situation. Now, the problem with this, of course, is that the games that you have set up to play do not allow for this. For example, a male who wishes to have moving through him a form of feminine energy is immediately considered effeminate and set aside as something strange and odd. I'm not speaking of homosexuality. I am speaking of that spontaneous part of the male psyche, if you wish to use this mysterious word, that allows the male to participate in and become lost in some of the wonders of the feminine energy himself, not through another vehicle, but in himself, to be able to weep with joy and to weep with anguish and to become dependent for a period of time and then to become a nurturing substance for someone else. In other words, there's so many things in the feminine aspect that the male needs to be able to experience. But you have so constructed it that to do so appears to be out of balance. I tell you this. Your perceptions of the world are upside down. You are so convinced that because you have a male or a female body, that is the energy that must manifest totally and utterly and strongly, that you have lost sight of the whole purpose, which is the balance. All right, so what are we talking about when we speak of male energy? First and foremost, male energy is dynamic action. Now, what does this mean, dynamic action? What about the great Ramana Maharshi? He sits, he does very little. Then is he considered to be a feminine aspect, not a male aspect? Absolutely not. Again, you have convinced yourself that action is something that must be done with the physical body, moving through the physical body, manifesting in some kind of doingness. You are an age and a race of doingness. You are the doers. And if you are not about doing, then people are looking upon you askance. So the Maharshi and many others who spent most of their time sitting quietly, not doing on the outward side, but moving spontaneously, sometimes of doing, sometimes of silence, sometimes of the rhythms that they felt moving within them, were those who had the balance. As you well know, the Maharshi, when he was able to go down and he would work with the cooking, and then he would work with the adults, and then he would work with the children. I mean, this was a spontaneous man, open to whatever was needful, and was able to participate as such. You are trying to raise a race of children based on an erroneous assumption, which is that the mother is the one that nurtures and the father is the one that disciplines. Based on the idea that if it's a woman, it has certain functions, and if it's a man, it has others. And go ahead if it pleases you. But I will assure you that you are doing more to harm your children's spontaneous joy of their total energies than any other thing that you could possibly be doing. Dynamic action in motion, that means, in my view, moving. Action means moving. It does not mean the physical frame is moving. It means the energies are moving. Many people who sit very silently, deeply absorbed, the energy is moving much more dynamically than one who is running about doing thus and thus and thus and who seems to be greatly active. But if you could see them from a psychic point of view, what you would observe is not moving energy, but entrapped in numerous places, numerous so-called psychic centers, if you wish to refer to them this way. So your eyes deceive you once again. You have no way of knowing whether you are moving dynamically by simply looking at someone else. How do you know if someone is moving dynamically? If you have the courage to pay attention and to open yourself, you will find out. Now, why do I say the courage? And I will say strictly this. It is a great threat to sense another human being's dynamic, free, open, uninhibited energy. There are two things that humans seem to fear. One is insanity. Why? Why is insanity so frightening? Because it's totally out of control, is it not? Unpredictable, totally unpredictable, from one moment to the next. Irrational, unpredictable, spontaneous action, whenever. Am I suggesting that all of you need to go psychotic in order to become enlightened? No. I'm simply saying, this is your area of fear, look at it. You are afraid of your own insanity, and you are afraid to be around those that are insane. It is based on the idea that those who are out of control are somehow no longer a functioning part, no longer a trustworthy part of the human experience. And you may be right. You may very well be right. Because if the human experience has been brought about in order to keep things in order and in very tight compartments, then indeed you have good reason to fear the insane and the enlightened, because neither of these two will let you stay in your organized little boxes. Both of these will say to you, with perhaps greater accuracy, even on the part of the insane, than you want to deeply consider, they will look at you and they will say, look at what you are doing. Is it not perhaps that you, in your tight, compartmentalized constrictions, are not the ones who are insane? And just this small taste of freedom of others is something more than you can bear. One of the reasons that the establishment became so upset at the onset of the flower age, of the flower children, was their total lack of inhibition. It was almost more than the establishment could bear. I am not saying that the flower children are the answer, because there was a need of deep responsibility that they were not able to participate in. But the fact remains that those of you who are afraid, those of you who want things organized and set out and very well controlled, will be miserable in this new age, and I promise you that. Be aware of this. The reason that the new age is going to free some of you is simply because all of your organized ideas are going to have to fall. Things that you plan will evaporate overnight. Ideas that you'd banked on are going to disappear overnight. All of the things that you have hung on to so tenaciously are going to dissolve before your eyes. Those of you who have security of the financial realm as that upon which you have built your life, it's going to dissolve. Those of you who believe in deep relationships, they may die. Those of you who care very much for certain plans of living and certain kinds of jobs, the jobs are going to dissolve before your very eyes. It is a new age. And what do we mean? We simply mean totally new. And those of you who cannot make the adjustment, you will choose to leave. It is very simple. When the world becomes chaotic, when the world no longer fits into your little ideas, then you will find out how flexible you can become. And if you cannot, you will break. You will choose a way to leave, I promise. because that is the one thing that the human fears most, is chaos. All right. Male energy. We spoke last week about fears. And I think that one of the things that has to be stated about the male energy is how a woman responds to male energy and what her feelings are about it, because I feel that deeply within, at the basis of so many of the conflicts that I observe in male and female on the earth plane, are these basic fears. In the case of the woman, just as the male senses and fears the power of the female, so too does the female sense and fear the power of the male. It is not in the same way, and it is not for the same reason, but nevertheless, it is there. And what is it? The thing that is the most difficult for the female is to realize that without the male energy in her life, in some way or other, she is not fulfilled. And before any of you jump to any conclusions, I will say this. The easiest way to have that male energy in your life is not necessarily to have a man in your life, but to simply have the male energy. The male energy moves through all of you at all times and in all places. How then to contact it? And the truth is that you contact it all of the time. The male manifests in various ways. It is like a light going on and off and on and off. Sometimes when a man is feeling in his masculine stride, he will be able to be forceful and dynamic and purposeful and move boldly onto the earth plane. And then he goes so far in this, and then he becomes afraid because he senses, just as the woman senses her power, the male senses his power. This is dynamic, divine power. He senses it, and he knows now that he has the power to create. Do you understand me? The male holds the power to create. The male aspect creates the dynamic thought forms, and the women bring them into fruition. The male creates the new movements, and the women bring them into nurturing state. Understand this. And when a male is truly in his stride, he knows deeply that he has the power to create, and therein lies the terror. Because if you can create, then you are responsible for what you create. Do you understand me? And the very fear of knowing you stand responsible stops your action. You may sense with your whole being, this is right. And you move into it and you feel the power. Do you understand? Am I relating? Can you understand me? You begin to sense, you know, this is right. I feel the rightness of it. And the boldness comes and you begin and you go a certain length. And then all of a sudden you find this very interesting phenomenon. The energy starts to dissipate and to move away. And perhaps you haven't been able to carry out your total commitment. Why? Fear. Fear of responsibility. At the last, at the end of the road, he who creates is responsible for what he creates. And there is a deep fear. And why is it so? Because you know full well, all male, female, everyone who has been a male, and that is all of you, knows full well that in the creation comes the responsibility. And that is what holds you back, because you have misassociated something. We go back to one of my earliest conversations with you in the deepest beginnings of our work together. You really feel that you can create something enduring against God's will. And this frightens you. And I tell you that you cannot. You can create transitory phantoms, oh yes, and do it all the time. There is nothing to fear, my friends. There is nothing to fear. If it is divinely inspired, then it will stay. It will be eternal. It will have eternal meaning, and you don't need to worry about it. If it is a phantom, then in its own good time it will dissolve. The fear comes because you have this idea in the back of your being of the great God, that is going to put their hand out and strike you dead for some kind of a creation against his will. You have not released that very basic idea. And this is why we have the phenomenon of so few dynamic, creative people. And when they do come to the earth plane, when they do begin their stride, be they male or female, it is a male energy. Look at a woman who is dynamic. It isn't feminine energy. If you're paying attention, it is not the feminine energy that is strident out. And males of weakerness simply fade out of their lives out of sheer terror. And so is it with weak women in the face of dynamic men. They cannot deal with it. And they rationalize it in many ways. They say, well, I'm afraid of their physical violence. I'm afraid they will pound upon me or throw me downstairs or whatever. And all that may be true. But really, what is the fear, the deep fear, is to participate in and be a co-partner to creating something that they will be responsible for. And it is a frightening thing. And it is all based on one very simple illusion. And the illusion stands in your mind that you can create something against God's will. And it is simply not so. You can create in the next week a million phantoms, and I don't care. If one of those phantoms has the divine will in it, it will live and it will never die. And the rest will die. You are fearful because you do not trust your own being, because you do not understand your own being. You do not understand that what you have created in this moment dies in the next moment. And in the very joy of creating and letting it die, what does it matter? Does it matter? You buy a beautiful object, do you have to keep it forever in order to have enjoyed it? Do you have to buy it at all? Is not just the looking upon it enough to suffice and take care of the inner need and look upon it and just drop it? Why are you so addicted to having things go on and on and on in an endless pattern of foreverness? To me, that is a great definition of hell. To have your same patterns continuing on forever, your same relationships, your same... Do you understand? If you want this for eternity, then there's something wrong with your view of things. So when a woman says, I'm afraid of a man, and they often do, because they do not wish to go in and confront deeply within them their own fear of their own responsibility of creation, they project it easily on the most obvious thing, which is, they run my life. They don't give me any freedom. They don't allow me to do this. They don't allow me to do that. That's easily seen. The truth is that no one is in bondage to anyone else unless they wish to be. I repeat, no one is in bondage to anyone else unless they wish to be. But the dance between the male and the female has been constricted and is so regimented. Each move is as if it is already preordained and predestined. Each movement of the finger, each movement of the hand, each movement of the arm, of the leg, of the right foot, of the left foot, how to point the toe, how to point the heel. It is very much as if you were doing one of the most difficult dances in the world. But the only problem, my friends, is that you have not shared with each other what dance you are doing. And you are trying, it is as if two dancers are trying to, between them, intuit what this dance is that they're trying to play together. They're trying to have a harmonious dance created between them. But neither one of them knows exactly what the rules are, because you see, the rules are different for each of you. If you have had a pleasant childhood, your responses will be one way. If you've had a difficult childhood, they will be different. If you've had a male in your life, but no female, difference. I mean, there are endless differences in how you choose to dance. And you have two people trying then to be wonderful dance partners, and all you're doing is staring at each other, trying to anticipate the next move, trying to block another move that they're about to make because you sense that that's not the move that you would wish to make, trying to pull them into your pattern of dance, and they're trying to pull you. Do you sense at all what I'm saying? It is this tremendous desire to get others to dance just as you wish. May I have another? I would like to put forward another view of the dance between the male and the female, and it is this. Let us envision a vast space, as vast as your mind can envision. And now let us have two lovers in it, moving wherever they wish, in whatever way they wish. and watching the other, no matter how far distant or no matter how close, moving in a beautiful and delightful and spontaneous pattern, and all you do as you move your own spontaneous, delightful pattern is to admire the movements of the other and make no attempt to copy them, to conform to them, or to control them. A totally different view of relationship. Freedom, my friends, to adore and admire and to worship, if you will, the dance of the other. But never make the mistake of saying, I will copy it. Because that is not the way. You must dance your own dance. You must. You must go within and find the life forces that are in movement within you, and you must dance them in your own way. And if you could only learn that you can dance together in the same vastness, and not need to imitate and to be doing the same movements, but to simply adore and watch and delight in the spontaneous movement of the other, a whole freedom comes in, into you and into them. And then the whole, where then is fear? Where? If you know that you have the right to your own movement, and you know that you have given with joy the other the right to their own movement, then why can it not be wondrous? Why do you have to be mirrors of each other, like the dolls that are moved by the ticking of the clock? Now we move, tick, tock, tick, tock, tick. Do you see? This is the way humans try. And they call this relationship. I call this death. I call this death. And I'm not just speaking of man and woman, female and male. I'm speaking of friend. I'm speaking of employer, employee. I'm speaking of parents and children. I'm speaking of the whole spectrum of a relationship. In every relationship, if you look carefully, there is a way that is dictated in your own mind of how you respond. And then if the other cannot conform to the very little movements that you have decided upon, then you decide there's something wrong with that person. And you try very hard to get their attention. Look, look, you're doing it wrong. This is the way. Look at me. This is the way it's done. Look at me. Death. Death to you and death to them. Because understand this. If you are so concerned with how others are dancing their dance, you are not paying attention to how you are dancing your own dance. And this is the great reason why the human condition stays asleep. You are not paying attention to your own dance. And when you begin to sense what your own dance is all about, and this is one thing that the psychedelic movement has done. People in the psychedelic movement have begun to sense their own dance. And they want to do things. Meditators, deep meditators, begin to sense their own dance. Therapy groups loosen up all those confines, and you begin to sense your own dance. And you want to begin to dance your own dance. And you start out in the room, and you find that it is completely filled with other people pushing upon you, saying, oh no, not that way, this way. Oh no, not that way, this way. Not that foot, this foot. All of that wonder that is ready to burst forth in a creative dance that will be a part of the dance of the Divine Mother or the Divine Father, whatever you wish to put it, now becomes incarcerated, limited because of all of those around you. Now, just as all of you wish to dance and find this, all of you also serve as prison makers for others. None of you stand as just the one who wishes to be free. You serve two functions. You may wish to be free, but you also serve as a prisoner, as the prison keeper of someone else. Think deeply on both sides of this. It is very simple to see oneself as the dancer who wishes to be free, and it is a lot harder to look very carefully at those areas of your life upon which you impinge your desires on other people. The male energy is the creator. I cannot think of a vaster sentence to say than that. The male energy is the creator. And there is not one of you that cannot participate in the divine createdness of things. But in order to do so, and herein lies the great abyss, You must drop your limited view. You must drop your ideas of the next moment and allow the dance to move through you. Someone who is truly in a dance is totally unaware of anything other than the dance. There may be a million people in adoration or hatred around them, and they know nothing. They only know themselves and the movement and the joy of it and the spontaneousness of it and the upwelling of it. They can do it alone with as much joy and in a room with a million with the same joy. It is the dance itself. It is not the partner. It is not the costume. It is the movement and the fire of the dance that gives meaning. And this is why the dervishes were able to reach that state of ecstatic abandonment, because they knew in the secret. Why do you think the Sufis dance? Because they know that done in the right way, it can free you for a moment to give you that glimpse, to open it up, to give you the chance. These are all traditions, and they're based wisely on the understanding that man, left alone, will continue to limit himself and others until death does he part. And it need not be. Fear of being responsible for your creations. Fear. It keeps you from dancing in any way you feel. And rest assured of one thing. If you begin to really dance, the world will begin to close in on you. Because a dervish dance out of hand is something that the constricted, constipated world cannot stand. So you do it at your peril. This is why I say with all deep sincerity, enlightenment is not for everyone. It is not. Those of you who cannot take the abuse that is bound to come and continue your dance, it isn't for you. And it is very unwise for those of you who might wish to participate in the divine dance to try and take people into it who are not ready for it, for any reason. Each man must decide for himself. You had a question?
Yes. I know that on the one hand, karma is karmic. We are not the doers. It's an illusion, and responsibility is a notion without any substance. And yet, on the other hand, you're speaking of the creative energy, the sense of responsibility for what we do, which is, I know, very strong in many, many people who want to do the right thing. They want to relate in the right way to people. And I'm wondering if you could clarify this for me so that I can have a better understanding of what the right attitude towards responsibility would be, since I think there is something legitimate in the sense of responsibility, and it's also true that the idea doesn't mean anything. So how do you deal with it?
I understand the question, and it's very well taken. And I certainly see the dilemma. I think where we see this most binding is in family relationships. In the sense of if you have brought a child into the world, or children, if you have committed to a woman or to a man, what then is your responsibility? And sadly, my dearest friend, I cannot give you a blanket statement because of this. In some people's destiny, the rightness of leaving the family situation, striking out on his or her own, women as well as men, even harder for a woman, to carve out a life closer to the austere pinnacle of realization. It is their destiny. And they must follow it. There are others who have a feeling of wanting that for the wrong reason, of wanting out of the family relationship only because it is boring, only because it is tedious, only because it is at times a burden. And this type of person, if they look carefully, will see the reasoning and then must make their decision. To abandon responsibilities such as children lightly is a foolish move. On the other hand, it is absolutely true that at some times it is the absolute right thing to do. I think it would be unfair to abandon a situation when you know full well they would flounder and drown without you. I think that would create more guilt than most people could deal with. But given the right circumstances, at times it is absolutely correct. At other times, it is absolutely incorrect. Now then, given this paradox of responsibility, how do you function in it? My friends, any of you in a relationship that you're thinking of abandoning, the question has to be deeply seen. Deeply seen. And in the seeing of it, the right action will be obvious to you. When you look within and you see within yourself the desire to break loose, break free, to be free, to go and do and whatever, be very careful. Because there is a great temptation to break loose and break free only to leave chaos behind you and move into other situations that create the same problem, the same bondage, the same chains, the same chaos. And it simply means you're bored. If you're in a relationship that bores you, you know my answer. That's fine with me. If, however, you are in a relationship that poisons, then it is not all right with me. And it is my observation on the earth plane that there are some people who have such poison in them toward others that they claim to love or claim to be in relationship with, such a negative thought about them, that it is a blessing that they leave them and give them a chance for another life. Everything depends on the quality of the relationship. It is also true to say that every relationship has embedded in it the capacity for coming together. In some cases, it is much more difficult. I understand that. But it is there. The question remains, what is your goal? And I think you cannot underestimate this point. I am speaking, I suppose, to deep seekers. At least it is my deepest hope that I am speaking to deep seekers. And those of you who feel your relationships pinching upon you must ask yourself the question, have I fallen into the age-old trap of blaming my environment for my pinching and not my own mental belief structure? Because I will tell you this, quite frankly, freedom is possible anywhere and in any circumstance. And oftentimes, the very circumstance that pinches the most is the one that will be the most conducive to your freedom, because it is the thing that will give you the greatest impetus. If you make your life so sweet, so easy, so free from encumbrance, you may fall asleep and there will be no one there to wake you up. If you have a shoe that pinches until you can't stand it, you are going to do something about that shoe. You will either buy a new shoe or you will do something about it. You will cut a hole in it, you will have to do something. But one of the problems with this whole thing, as I've said so many times, is that the temptation is to start throwing people out of your life. But if you have not finished those leftovers, if you wish to put it there, if you have not learned the lesson that the pinching meant you to learn, which is many things, then believe me, you will find another to fill that spot. Many women and men divorce only to find that their friends provide this same problem. You don't have to have a male or a female in order to have these problems. So, be very careful. And a real seeker asks only one thing. Is it me? Or is it them? And the real seeker knows, deeply within them, that within themselves they know one thing. If it is time for a change, the change is unavoidable, and they need take no action. Do you understand me? They need take no action. If you begin acting in your life and changing this and throwing this one out and putting this one in and making all these changes, what you are doing is deciding that you know. And that is, believe me, your ego deciding. But I have promised you one thing. The sincere seeker, when it is time, will always have exactly what they need. And if the sincere seeker needs time of solitude, of quiet, of the simple life, if their heart is ready for that, if their responsibilities, if you will, have been balanced to such an extent, that it is possible. By that I mean inner responsibilities and not any of your mentalizations. If the balance is ready, then the time will be there. In the most encumbered life will open a new way for them for freedom. But I have to say this. The greatest help that you can give as a seeker is to give freedom of movement to all seekers. All seekers. And that is not easily done. Because somebody knocks on your door and you have a question. Does your heart open or does your heart close? Do you take them in? Do you throw them out? You say, but. Oh yes, there are always buts. I mean, things are not convenient. Do you think that being a master seeker is convenient? If you are looking for convenience, then you had best look someplace else. This is not a convenient path. In fact, it is totally inconvenient. And if convenience is one of your master desires, then please bow out now. Bow out now. You will never make it. You will never make it. And out of every inconvenience, as you see it happening, as you watch it growing, you have a choice. You close in, you constrict, you become resentful, you fight, or you open up and you say, wonderful, let's see what's in it here. Let's see what's in this. There's bound to be something. After all, this is life in motion. What's here? Let's participate openly, freely, totally, accepting your negative feelings. I mean, you know, not throwing them out, but just participating in this thing. It is much easier to close the door, to keep the world out. And thus we have the sad story of many so-called yogis who go to the mountains, the hermits, the monks, and spend months in solitude, only to have one poor straggler come by one cold night. And the person is consumed with anger because they dared to interfere with their lofty meditations. This is a person whose residue has not come to stillness. So what then is the answer? The hardest thing of all, which is to trust the process. If you go on doing your inner work, whatever that is, and are as honest as you can be with those around you in your environment, giving them their choices, laying it out very clearly what your desires are, being precise about it, and giving the other the opportunity either to join you, or to fight against you, or to leave you. their freedom, knowing that your only job, is to do your inner work, and then watch what happens in your life. This is the realm of the miracle. And the problem with the intellectual is they don't believe in miracles. But miracles happen all the time to the surrendered one. All of the time. But the intellectual has a hard time believing that. Have I covered it? Is there something that you would like to add, question, ask? You're asking what is the responsibility. My answer has to be, I cannot tell you. It is an internal thing. It is an internal thing. But I know one thing about seekers. The phony seeker is the one who has decided ahead of time what is maximum. Out of some book, out of some great treatise on the Himalayan hermitages and so forth, and tries to duplicate their life after that. The real seeker says, life is, whatever is before me is it, and I will participate. And I will joyously participate, and I would like to say this again, loud, clear, and strong. I will joyously participate. Not reluctantly, not half-heartedly, not with an inward brooding feeling, but joyously participate. Enjoying it, participating in the instant that it's here, and then when it's gone, it's gone. And be joyously participating in the new instant. And whatever's here is wondrous. Whatever goes, that was wondrous. Whatever takes its place, that is wondrous. That is all I can tell you. Because you see, life is not like a road. It is not like a road. It is like a bird moving through the skies. The bird doesn't see its path. It doesn't know where it's going. It just knows vaguely out there is the vastness and it's moving through it. There are no road signs out there. But then the bird realizes in a moment, but the joy is my flight. How wondrous! How wondrous I feel, the wind in my feathers, the wonder of the upliftment. I'm flying, how wonderful! And then the vast look below, does it matter if it's over the sea? There's wondrous things to see over the sea. And then it goes through the city, well, that's interesting. Then it goes over the mountain, well, that's interesting. What does it care? The flight, my friends, is the important part of it. Not the end, not the destination, the flight. Who do you care what bird is next to you? One day one bird will be there, the next day another. One will die, another will take its place. What do you care? You are in flight.
Bartholomew, in our relationships with others, why do we prefer to continue exhausting the same pattern of behavior and response with person after person after person, as opposed to learning the lesson from relating to just one person?
I cannot say strongly enough that the key to so many of your patterns is that you are seeking a way out of boredom. Please do not underestimate the terrible reluctance of the human being to be bored. And if you have noticed relationships, oftentimes you will hear somebody say, I loved seeing this person for a few days. Well, what is that wonderful saying you have? Let me see if I can reconstruct it. Guests like fish smell after 3 days. Something of this nature. Well, do you understand? This is a very human response. And you understand that about friends and visitors and so on, but then you are deluded in thinking that because you marry someone that somehow this rule no longer applies. I assure you, my friend, somewhere down the line, the same odor will arise. It's just a matter of how willing are you to understand that at some place in this relationship, you become bored. Because you have gone through the patterns, you have heard it all, you know what's going to happen, everything is very predictable, your life is very predictable, and there, everyone, you know, it's a strange situation. The human so craves dependability and security, and once they have it, they become bored with it. You know, it's this double paradox that I see at play on the earth plane all the time. So The number one thing is this. It is a very rare human being that says, there is nothing wrong with this relationship. What is wrong is me. There's something wrong with me. And I can have a change of partner 16 times, 20 times, and there will still, at the end of it, however long it takes, still be something wrong with me. And what is the wrongness of the thing? And this is my answer, I hope, my friend, to your question. As long as you believe that other people in any way can give you something that you need, then you will continue to find someone to play with. The minute that you know that you have it all within, that you need nothing from without, that you simply take it in and give it out, the minute you know that, then the need for others dissolves. And my friend, that is the last thing that this earth plane wants you to realize. And why? If you realize that, then what need do you have of other people? Then where is their function? You see, you have the game so constructed that you are the ones, all of you, are the ones who give to others. Your role, you define your role of happiness. I am happy if I am serving. Isn't that true? Isn't that how you say it? I am happy if I am giving. I am happy if I am serving. I am happy if I'm, you know, doing a good work or taking care of a good thing or running a good this or a good that. This is how you define your happiness. And on the earth plane, the more people you help in the greater abundance and the more meaningful, then the better you are. All of this carries one tremendously difficult part to it, which means your happiness depends on other people. And this is why the most difficult relationship to maintain is the marriage relationship. Because it makes you vulnerable. If you have decided, please see if you can follow me. If you have decided that you lack something and you need something, and you have decided that what you need, if you are a male, is a female, that's something you don't have, that you need, and all the books tell you that this is what you need to have a balance, and you have to get the balance from the female, and this will balance you, and da-da-da-da, whatever, all these wonderful things. If you believe that, then you are vulnerable from the very beginning. Because now your happiness depends on another person. And now you must begin to play, pretend. To pretend to enjoy, to pretend to adore, to pretend all of these things. Why? Because you are frightened. If that person chooses to walk out and not to play with you, how can you play? What people are the most miserable, basically, are the ones who want to participate in the male-female and cannot find a partner to play with. It is based on the illusion that you need another person to play, and it is not so. But your mind has so conditioned you, because you identify it with proximity of bodies, with proximity of roles, one role for one and one role for another, coming together, having a complete whole. It has to do with sex, it has to do with all of these things, and they are all bound up in one grand illusion. And the hardest one to give up, and the one that the world least wants you to understand, is that you alone are totally whole, complete, and need nothing. That is the greatest challenge to another ego. Because the other ego's identity comes from serving you, from being important to you, from taking care of you, or from whatever it is. Do you see what I'm saying? So countless times you repeat and have to get another path. It doesn't matter if you pick the same person. You might find one, you take the same person, and then the next time it's the same, but only a little different, and so on. So, well, that is sometimes true, sometimes not true. Some people learn their lesson. This type of person is not good for me. People do learn some things, limited things. But you can learn as many of those periphery lessons as you want and get yourself just a perfectly wonderful mate. And still, you will not be free, and on some level, you will feel uncomfortable. And the reason you feel uncomfortable is that you do not like being dependent on another person for your happiness, and I say congratulations. I am not in favor of people feeling that they need others for their happiness, because you will never be free. You will never be free. You can learn certain lessons and say, all right, this kind of wife, I understand now. And you can learn it, deeply, truly. Only to find another wife, which will bring out another problem. Maybe it's a very small problem. Maybe you have a very happy marriage. I'm not opposed to happy marriages. And I see that they are possible. People make the necessary adjustments. And marriages are fine. Some of them are very nice. But happy marriages do not free you. They cannot free you. There's nothing in the marriage situation that will free you unless you use it for freedom. Nothing is necessary for your freedom but one thing. The constant, moment-to-moment, relentless assault on the illusion in any way you see fit. Without that assault, you will not succeed. I say it is simple, but it is not easy. And I do not care what situations you are in. I don't think you should care what situation you're in. I don't think it matters. Trust one thing. Surrender your life and say, all right, now it's up to you guys. I'm yours. Give me 8 wives, 16 children, 2 orphanages, and 29 goats, and it's all right with me. Here I am. Take it all away, and that's all right with me. And mean it. And mean it. Give up the control. But you don't give up the control because you think you know. And you know, my dear friends, you don't know. And you do not know. And simply by continuing to tell yourself intellectually, you know, you're going to miss. Because I promise this, if you have surrendered your life, the divine will take care of it. It will move people out of your life and pull other people in. And you will just sit there and be amazed. And maybe for 2 years you will have people running out of your ears, and then one day you'll wake up and you'll be alone. And the wonder of it will be overwhelming. You see, my friends, you don't know what you need because you haven't looked. So there are two ways. Either surrender moment by moment and deeply say, moment by moment, I'm yours, whatever you want, whatever you want. Here I am. What'll I say? What'll I do? How will I move? What do you want? What do you want? Here I am. That's one way. Or the other way is to go, which is harder, to go deeply, deeply, deeply within to your being until these things unfold themselves more and more and more and more on a deep level. Both ways are possible. Pick your way. Not all, you know, we cannot say everyone goes one way, everyone goes another, but these are the two ways. And in those deep moments, which is usually the one who has the isolated life, who has the hours to put in, who has constructed their life so they have those deep hours, then it comes out of that. But whatever your life is, if you accept it, totally as it is, without any restrictions, and allow it to live its life, those things that are needful will leave you, and those things that are not, excuse me, those things that are needful to leave you will leave you, and those things that you need will stay. Your life will be a movie. What do you care? If you're the screen, what do you care if it's a cast of millions or cast of one? If you're the screen, it's all the same. But preconceived ideas of how your life will be are oftentimes come about because you do not wish to learn the lesson. And you say to me, do I have to learn my lesson? And I say to you this following statement. When I say learning your lesson, I mean only one thing, which is to go within and see that it is your belief structure, your situation alone, that has created the environment that you are in, that you have been the creator of it. And once you know that, then you begin to free yourself. Until that time, you will blame the gods for creating your life. And that is not the truth. The only lesson that man needs to learn is that he is not, has not, and could never be a limited ego. That he is not the mind. That he is not the body. That he is the vastness within which both exist. And that is the only lesson. And life will teach you if you will allow it. Have I left hanging ends.
Well, I have one to bring up that I don't know if you want to take or even to address it. I've spent much of my time alone, and sexual needs have risen their demanding hits frequently. And I am not certain about the surrender of that. If you have, say you have a need for physical affection.
All right, this is a very bona fide question. I don't know if you will like my answer, but I must give it. Oh, yes, thank you. The question is, what about your sexual needs? If you are in a life that does not have a partner and you feel sexual needs arising, what then is the way? How then do you take care of these needs? My dear friend, that is the pinch of your shoe. And just as I would say to anyone, if the shoe pinches, find out why. And when you have a sexual need and there is no one in your life to fulfill it, there are various approaches. One, you can spend the rest of your life trying to find someone to fulfill that, which takes a lot of time. And indeed, if it is your destiny not to have that fulfilled, you never will. And if it is your destiny, you will. You understand, you're working again on the wrong assumption. You are working on the assumption that somehow there is nothing within that momentary situation that can free you. And that is an illusion. Those who have this sexual craving and cannot find a way to work out of it, to release it, if they are wise and if they are master seekers, they realize that this then is the very thing that they need to use as the fire to free them. Because I promise you this, an enlightened person has no such desires. Some people have relationships that pinch so badly that they have to work them through and accept that. But people who have the sexual craving and have no way out of it, instead of accepting that as their necessary and interesting and helpful part of their life, try somehow to remedy it. Do you understand? It's the difference between the person who is ill and who spent their whole lifetime seeking the answer, the solution through, you know, 25 medical doctors and $25,000 worth of indebtedness, or the one that goes to one or two people, finds out it's incurable, and simply does the best they can with it, and learning from it, and accepting that that is part of the human condition. This is the thing that I think you must understand. As much as you may not believe me, physical desire starts in the mind. You will tell me that is not so, that the body starts it, and I will tell you, if you were paying very close attention, you will see that is not true. It is the mind that begins and the body that responds. It all is in the mind. And the more one pushes against it, the more one tries to stay away from it, the more one tries to abandon it or take care of it or do something with it, makes it a large problem in their life, then you are just simply adding more and more and more energy to this.
I'd like to know that. I thought it was something like if you had to do something about like brushing your teeth for body maintenance. Maybe.
You do not have to do anything about this. It is simply that some people have physical outlets. I will tell you quite frankly, there are some people that have the opposite problem. They would much prefer to have no sexual relationships because they're trying to do something quite different. But they're stuck with the sexual relationship. There are no rules, my friend. There are no rules. But what you must understand clearly is that it begins in the mind. And physical needs of any kind, if you become hungry, and if you cannot find a way out of your hunger because there is no food around and there is nothing to do about it, there's only one thing to do, and that is to accept it. If you cannot fulfill that need, you simply accept it. By the same token, but on a lesser scale, because you will not die if you do not have a sexual relationship, although you might die over a long period of time if you had no food, one has to totally accept it. And I mean totally accept it. Look at it, understand it, and accept it. This is a need. It's not being met. Maybe I don't need it met because I have promised you one thing, which of course people don't believe. If that was necessary, you would have it. What kind of a God is it that you have in your mind that would create a basic need, such as a sexual partner, and then deny it to you? What kind of a God is that? I want no part of that God. The mind bombards constantly. You know, if you could change your television and have it bombard you constantly with the need for enlightenment, you would find your mind beginning to change. If the television and the radio and everything kept telling you, and the newspapers kept telling you, look, the worst thing in the world for you to have is sex. What you really need is to have enlightenment. Pretty soon you would have people saying, how can I get rid of my sexual partner? I'm not interested anymore. I want enlightenment. Your mind has convinced you and your body follows. How do you think healing happens? How do you think illness happens? The mind decides and the body plays it out. The mind is constricted and the body plays out the obstacle. How is that process reversed? The mind decides, I am going to be free of it, I've had enough of it, and the body follows the pattern. You've got it mixed up. You think it is the body that begins and the mind that follows, and it is not so. You punish yourself through your body. I would suggest to anyone who has a deep and sincere sexual need that is not being met, the chances are on some level of your mind, you are blocked. In some way, there is a blockage, either a deciding to punish yourself because of past so-called misdeeds in the sexual area, either in this life or in a past life or whatever you want to call it, or a feeling that sex is a repugnant thing and one shouldn't participate, or one cannot have a sexual relationship if one is going to develop spiritually, da-da-da. There are all these rules. But what difference does it make at the end? Because sex is not going to bring you to enlightenment. If your desire is sex, then forget about enlightenment, because you can find sex, I don't care who you are. If sex is your only desire, it's there. You can find it. You can either buy it, or you can control somebody into giving it to you. If that's what you want, it's always there. I do not think sex is a bad commodity to find on the market. I think it's there. It's always there. If you want it, it's just like, what kind of toothpaste do you want? I think you can always find sex if you want it. The fact is that most of you don't have that as a primary goal. So I would ask you all to look at your goals. Be very clear. If you really want freedom, then there are a lot of other things that do drop from the wayside. They simply do. If you were going to live a perfectly normal life and not have any exalted ideas of freedom and simplicity and so forth, there will be plenty of people to come and fill your life and fill all of its needs. But most of you are not willing to compromise. You have to take what comes your way. Those of you who have sex in your life and don't want it, you have to take it. Those of you who don't have it and want it, you have to take that. That is part of the program. I do not think they matter at all. I think that the emphasis is so strongly on these things that they make them far greater problems than they really are. And you have done a great job because you have deflected yourselves totally from the main goal. So what if you have sexual desires? So what? So what? You have other desires too. So what?
I suspect that if that problem were solved, if that's a problem that's solved, then some other problem will
come. Always, and I'm sure you're perfectly aware of that. Take care of your sexual needs and then other needs will come up. They're always there because you understand desire is hydra-headed. There's always desires lurking. The only thing is to chop them all off and say, I'm through with it. I'm going to have one abiding, never-ceasing thrust. And follow it in any way that's meaning. And as these other things arise, of course they arise. So what? So what? Today, you have a sexual desire. Tomorrow, you need a little bit of more money. The next day, you'd like to have a friend. You're lonely. The next day, you'd like to have a new car. Your car's falling apart. The next day, you'd like to... So what? Over and over and over again, these things are going to come up. The thing that has trapped people on the sexual relationship is that they honestly believe that their body, somehow, their body has to have it. And I ask you this, how many enlightened beings that you know or read about had a sexual need? Please answer that for me.
Well, I've never known how honest they were being.
They were being utterly honest, and there was absolutely no need. A truly enlightened being has no need. Why? Because that energy has been taken and released. What you're talking about when you talk about sex energy is energy, and it is stuck in one area. And what sticks it there, my dear friend? Your mind sticks it there. And this is why, when you really become a master seeker, You start taking that energy and placing it someplace else. It moves. You placed it there by your very thinking. The body doesn't care where the energy is. The body is perfectly happy to have energy located, you know, at your big toe or at your navel or at your third eye or your eighth eye or whatever. Your body doesn't care. Your mind does. And by your thoughts, so you gather that energy. I've told you before, that's how enlightenment works. That's all it is, gathering enough energy for one exalted thrust. That's all it is. If you're going to stick it there on your sexual center, fine. Then you're going to squirm. If you're squirming, that's why I say, the master seeker says, ah, I see, the sexual energy is squirming. Therefore, it means it's stuck there. How am I going to get rid of it? Well, the best way to get rid of it is to just keep on. Again, it goes back to the same humdrum, boring thing. How many times are you going to be patient enough to listen to me? But it's the same thing. Where is your attention? If your attention is on the space within, on the awareness within, on the expansion within, then that energy will move. If you make energy in your sexual area a problem, it will stick. If you have an emotional problem because you decide you have to have a lover and you don't have a lover, or the lover's not loving you in the way that lovers should love you, or whatever this little game you're playing, then where are you stuck? You're stuck in your emotional center. Or in your mental mind. Well, my mind, I have to have more thoughts and I have to work this through and so on. And then your mental center becomes the very stimulus for the whole thing. You select which area of your being you are going to give power over you. An intellectual rarely has a great deal of trouble with their sexual center. Have you noticed that? A lot of intellectuals rarely think about it. It's simply because that's not where the energy is. And very sensual people very rarely have very intellectual problems. They don't worry about things. They don't worry about the nature of the universe and all this kind of thing. Why? Because the energy is here. Very emotional people, they don't care about either. They care about their emotions. They don't care about sex or intellect. They care about emotion, this phony thing that they call love and adoration. That's what they care about. Where is your center?
Okay. I agree with all you say. But sometimes a man and a woman are then put together, though, for a function they can do as a combination.
Right.
Doesn't have to have anything to do with sex.
Right. Oftentimes.
They could be more effective in the world as
There is, you see.
Right. So you don't need to be effective.
There is no need. All you need to do is do your dance. All you need to do is do your dance. In whatever way your intuitive inner being guides you to do it, do your dance. And there are billions of people dancing with you. You see, it's an illusion that you're alone, ever. There are millions of people dancing with you, always. Always. It's just that if your perception is that people have to be within four walls sitting now down next to you and now I'm not lonely, that is a grand illusion, because many people sitting in rooms with other people are utterly lonely. Loneliness is a matter of being. If you are away from your center, you should be lonely. If you're in your center, you're not lonely. But others don't like that, because others want to be needed. So if you're not lonely in your center, that's a threat. Well then, where's my function? I'm not needed. This person isn't lonely. Then they don't need me. They don't love me. Oh, I don't know about that. Maybe they love you. Maybe they greatly enjoy having you around. Maybe they just don't need you. Maybe they like you and enjoy you and are happy to have you, but they don't have to need you. A need, I think, of another human being is the death knell. If you need someone in that sense, I sense a death knell. Because you resent greatly those things that you need because you feel bound. Do you understand me? If you need something in your life and you feel like the prisoner needs the jailer to bring him his food, needs it. Without it, he will starve. Do you think that there's any kind of real chance of a real rapport between these two? How can it be when your very life depends on him remembering you, on him supplying your need three times a day? I see it as a great trap. Sexual needs, emotional needs, financial needs, intellectual needs, name them. They're infinite. And they're all based on the fact that you have not seen something perfectly obvious. I know I've gone on too long, so I will end this. But the obvious end to all of this comes here. You need nothing. You have everything. And instead of rejoicing with each other that you both, all, totally, freely, need no one, but can have the joy and delight of relationship without need. Instead, you are filled with fear that someone will not need you. And I say that you're not looking. Because you will see that the greatest relationships are those that are based on the fact that you do not need each other at all, but you are then left with the wonder of being able to enjoy each other. And therein lies a great deal of difference. Need binds you. Needs bind you. Joyful participation liberates you. It's all in your choice. I've gone on much too long, but I thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Bertha.